Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. 5 years ago this week, the United States invaded the country of Iraq in a war that was based on the threat of weapons of mass destruction and the perceived need to remove from office a tyrant. We were told that the war would be quick, that we would be welcomed as saviors, that the cost would be low, and that it would be paid for by that country's oil revenues. 5 years later, we have 158,000 troops on the ground. Almost 4,000 of our brave men and women have died in the conflict. Another 29,000 have been wounded. And the cost is conservatively estimated at $500 billion and counting. The Iraqi death toll has been estimated in the hundreds of thousands by some quarters. At home, some are blaming the cost of the war for an economy that appears to be heading into a recession and for oil priced at $110 a barrel. Opinion polls show that most of the country wants to end the war and wants our troops to come home, but that we are divided on how to do it and are concerned that a precipitous withdrawal could have devastating consequences and further destabilize the Middle East. Today on Route 51, we welcome two local men who have served in Iraq and who have had their lives changed in the process. Brian Jopek is a staff sergeant with the Wisconsin Army National Guard. He served a year as a broadcast non-commissioned officer in Mosul, recording and telling the stories of the men and women serving in northern Iraq. He tragically lost his own son, 20-year-old Ryan Jopek, in the summer of 2006 to a roadside bomb. Sergeant Jopek will be redeployed to Guantanamo in Cuba starting next week. Also joining us, Steve Horvath, an assistant professor and youth development agent for UW Extension Wood County, who served in Iraq following a 3-year stint with the Peace Corps. He is working with an organization called Operation Military Kids, dealing with the problems faced by families with children when mom and dad are called to service overseas. Now, as always, we invite you to join the conversation, and we welcome your phone calls at 261-6371. That's 261-6371, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Brian Jopek joining us today from Madison, Wisconsin. Brian, are you still with us after the break?
Yeah, I'm still here, Glenn.
And joining us here in the studio, Steve Horvath. Now, 3,991 men and women have died in Iraq in the past 5 years. Brian, one of them was your own son, 20-year-old Ryan Jopek. The death hit all of us in Wisconsin very hard, and especially in his hometown of Merrill. Here's a story we ran on the funeral that day in August of 2006. The motorcycles formed a procession 200 riders long, down streets lined with American flags and yellow ribbons. For the Patriot Guard, it was their second visit to Merrill this summer, a point not lost on Police Chief Neil Strobel, who walked the line and thanked them and asked them never to return.
Thanks for coming to Merrill and helping us. Appreciate it. Okay. This has been a pretty tough time for our city and the family, and this makes a huge difference for us. So let's do this again, never.
The small city of Merrill has now lost two young men to the war in Iraq, Specialist Grant Dampier and now 20-year-old Sergeant Ryan Jopek. Strobel says it's tough on their friends and tough on the city.
This is a pretty close-knit community on a lot of fronts, and to have two of our young men die, these are recent graduates, their circle of friends is still very tight.
Thought it was your
Hundreds of mourners gathered inside the Merrill High School fieldhouse where Ryan Jopek played basketball and listened to a eulogy by Governor Jim Doyle. It was his second funeral here, too.
Well, we are gathered again, once again, in this beautiful town and this beautiful state in an absolutely gorgeous August day to mourn the passing and to pay tribute and respect to one of the finest sons of our state, our hero, Sergeant Ryan Jopek.
Choking back tears, Ryan's uncle, Tim Jopek, recalled an enthusiastic kid with an infectious smile who wanted to make a difference, and he issued a challenge to those who knew him.
If we truly believe he was a hero, I challenge every one of us here to look at your lives, look at the world, and think of some way that you can make a difference, from spiritual to political, whatever it would be. And when we do it, we think of Ryan, and in that way, he's still with us.
Sergeant Ryan Jopek lost his life to a roadside bomb while on his last mission in Iraq 2 weeks before he was scheduled to return home. He was buried next to Grant Dampier, also of Merrill, who was killed in May. Ryan's father, Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, himself a veteran of Iraq, says his son would have wanted it that way. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us from Madison as we mark this fifth anniversary of the Iraq War, Sergeant Brian Jopek. Brian, your brother Tim was outspoken at the funeral about what he hoped we could gain from the sacrifice of Ryan and so many of these other brave men and women. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think it's being in the military, it's I guess I have a little bit of a different perspective. By no means any better than anybody else's or anything, but I not only think about, you know, my son, but I think about them all, you know. It all hits pretty hard, especially after it happens to you. I mean, I've always taken Veterans Day very seriously, Memorial Day very seriously, but when it happens... When it happens to you, it brings it home that much more. But as far as what Tim said at the funeral, I think he pretty much summed it up really well there.
Brian, what advice do you have for other parents who may have just learned that their loved ones made the ultimate sacrifice overseas? Is there anything you can tell them from your perspective as someone who went through it a year and a half ago?
Well, I don't know if there's really any advice, Glenn. I mean, it's something that you're always going to go through. I mean, it's something that's always going to be with you from the knock on the door to whatever you're doing at a certain moment in time. The only thing that you can do is find a way to deal with it. I mean, that's... you know, in my case, staying involved with the guard, my family, you know, taking care of my family and that sort of thing. You know, not trying to forget at all, but just trying to deal with it. I mean, that's really the only piece of advice that I could offer is, I it's one of those deals where I can honestly tell somebody else that I do know what they're going through. I mean, I can honestly say that. You know, I don't know how many times during the course of your day-to-day life you hear things happen to people and you want to say, well, yeah, I know what you're going through, but you really, you know, 9 times out of 10 you really don't. You know, you're trying to comfort them in that. But in this case, I can honestly say to another parent of a soldier who lost his or her life in combat that I do know what you're going through.
Brian, what do you hope that we're able to accomplish in Iraq and the Middle East with the sacrifice of these young lives and so much of the country's treasure?
Well, there's a part of me that really hopes that we can still turn it around. When I was there in 2004, I was seeing a lot of positive. Of course, you were hearing a lot about the negative stuff that was coming out in the media, and even now you still hear a lot about the negative stuff. At the same time, I know that we've got people over there that are doing what they can to help. When I was there, civil affairs units were working on and everything from reestablishing the law enforcement element to the infrastructure, you know, power stations, that sort of thing. Unfortunately, in some cases, they had that stuff built up in the day and by day, and the bad guys would go in and try to blow things up at night. You know, it's one of those ongoing battles at that time, and I'm sure that there's probably still quite a bit of that going on now. But I know that there's a lot of good things that they're trying to accomplish there. Trying to get that country back on its feet. I guess one could argue how the government has gone about doing it, you know, over the years.
Well, let's fast forward to the present time. Now, just a few weeks ago, in the Wisconsin primary election, there was a speech by presidential candidate Barack Obama, who is wearing Ryan's military bracelet, a bracelet that your wife Tracy and your daughter Jessica gave to him during an appearance in Green Bay.
We're here because of the mother that I met in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who gave me this bracelet that I'm wearing. Inscribed on it is the name of her son, Ryan. He was 20 when he was killed by a roadside bomb in Iraq. And next to his name it says, all gave some, but he gave all. We are here because it is time to ask ourselves as a nation if we are serving Ryan and his compatriots and all our young brave men and women as well as they are serving us. They need us to end this war and bring them home and give them the care and the benefits that they deserve. They need change, Houston.
For better or for worse, Brian, your son's sacrifice has now become part of the political campaign. Can you tell us why Tracy wanted to give him the bracelet to the extent that you can? Because I know that you personally do not want to become, or at least I imagine you don't want to become, part of the political conversation here.
Well, and I want to make clear that that Tracy and I are no longer married. She's my ex-wife. But basically, Glenn, from what I understood in some email exchanges with Tracy and from reading some of the stories that came out at the time, she just wanted to put a name. You know, she wanted Mr. Obama to know Ryan's name. That's all. It was just something that she had intended to just hand to him. She wasn't looking to turn it into a big media event, which, you know, of course, that's what it ended up being. And she just wanted it to be something between Barack Obama and herself. And actually, because some of the negative feedback she's gotten on the internet, you know, internet blogs, you know, people accusing her of, or accusing Obama of trying to get votes, doing it, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
She has turned down any subsequent interviews with the media because she just didn't want it to get turned into something that it wasn't. She had told me that in an email that she had asked Mr. Obama to not wear the bracelet anymore in any of his public appearances, which I don't think he's.
It has been a while since he's brought it up.
Right. Well, but the other night I was watching the news and he was on speaking somewhere and he was still wearing it on his right wrist. I could see it on his right wrist. So that's his own choice. I mean, that's something Barack Obama. That's a choice if he continues to wear it despite Tracy asking him not to. Because she is a Barack Obama supporter, and she didn't want to do anything to sabotage his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's still wearing the bracelet, then that of course is entirely up to him.
Maybe there's a difference between wearing it and making a point of bringing it up in your speeches.
Sure, I could be.
Well, for better or for worse, Brian, it has been 5 years. This has become a political issue now. Polls show that a majority of Americans no longer support the Iraq War, but they're conflicted about how to leave. How long can we sustain this conflict or any conflict if it doesn't have the support of the American people?
Well, I guess I'm just an E6, so that's well above my pay grade from a military standpoint. I guess the only thing I can say is whatever is decided, I hope it's something that is going to benefit not only our people, our service people, but in the long run the Iraqi people as well, because we don't, even as much money has been spent, as many lives have been lost, including my oldest boy, we don't want to do anything any more screwy than I guess, you know, some people can say, some people have said, some people argue, has been done to this point. You want to make sure the job is done. I mean, we're there, and we don't want to have to...
You don't want to make things worse.
Right. Well, you don't want to go back in 10 years and you know, try to fix it again and lose even more people, spend a bunch more money, and do it all over again. I guess that's whatever's decided, whether it's a Republican in office or a Democrat in office, I sincerely hope they just look at the big picture and not just, you know, pull up stakes or pop smoke, as we say in the military, just because of the political atmosphere.
Steve Horvath, let's bring you into this conversation. Why don't you give me your opinion as somebody who served in Iraq to the same question I just asked Brian. To what extent can that conflict or any conflict be sustained without the support of the American people?
Well, first of all, let me just offer my condolences to Brian and to his family. And I can't say I know how it is to be there. We lost some folks in our battalion, so we had that a burden to bear, if you will. But I just want to offer my condolences to Brian and to his family and wish them the best. As far as where can this go and what's the best outcome that we can hope for, I think the reality, Glenn, is that we're not going to be going if we leave the country of Iraq, we're not going very far. That's the reality, and we're going to be there for a long time.
Regardless of who wins the presidential election,
that's my opinion that we will be in the region. There's really no question about that. I think the situation that we've gotten ourselves into is such that we can't leave, I hope that there is a good amount of diplomacy that's used to bring the partners in the neighboring countries to the table, Iran, Syria, other folks who certainly have an interest in the peace in the peace process and in living in a peaceful region. So my hope is that those are some of the steps that are taken, and that will end in a positive way.
We're talking to Steve Horvath and Brian Jopek, two men who have served in Iraq on this, the fifth anniversary of the war. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. We're going to take a quick break, and we do invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number is, again, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War. Our guests, two men who have served there, Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek and also Steve Horvath, who is currently working with the 4-H program in Wood County. And Steve, you're also working with another organization called Operation Military Kids. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Sure. Operation Military Kids, I'm actually doing this in my role with University Extension. It's one of the programs that I'm working on. And I got involved in this shortly after I returned in late 2006. I went back to work full-time in January of 2007. But prior to going back to work, one of the first, just to give a little background on my family situation while I was gone, one of the first events that I attended with my wife when I returned home to a school function was report card pickup day in late November of 2006. And our two oldest kids at the time were in eighth and seventh grade, respectively. And so I think most listeners know when kids get into junior high school age, then they go to one teacher after another. They don't have one teacher they see all day long. And what I was really surprised to see was that, or to realize was that only one of the teachers out of all the teachers that my kids had knew that I had been gone and was serving in Iraq. That was something that I took upon myself too, that I had the responsibility to let them know before I left. But as Brian can probably attest, it's such a busy time when you've been given the word that you're going to be going. There's so much to do that, and the time goes by so quickly that literally went right over my head. And so I decided there has to, I'm just one of many, I'm sure, who are in a similar situation. And so I was able to get involved with the Operation Military Kids program just by happenstance because one of my colleagues, Sue Curtis, she works out of the UW-Platteville campus, but mm-hmm. also through extension, has gotten involved in this.
So what does the organization try to do?
What Operation Military Kids is, Glenn, is it's working in our state, working primarily with reserve military families and those families who are in the National Guard. In other states that have active duty military bases, Operation Military Kids will work right with active duty military families. So here in Wisconsin, the main focus is to work with what are called geographically dispersed military families. In other words, families who may live right next to you and I in communities throughout the state, but who have been called to active duty to serve and have had to leave their families and kids behind.
And try to provide the services that are necessary for those families.
Provide services, and one of the main goals for Operation Military Kids is to, one, raise awareness in the community that you may have a neighbor that's serving in the military.
Let's raise awareness right now. If people want to find out more about your organization, how do they reach you?
Well, the easiest way is you can call me directly at the Wood County University Extension office, and my number there is area code 715-421-8439. And give me a call, and I can certainly give you more information.
Give us that number again.
It's area code 715-421-8439.
We're talking to Steve Horvath and Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek on the war in Iraq on this, the 5th anniversary, on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. We'll be back with more right after this break for news.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
To carry on, heroes, let's stand up for these heroes and say a prayer for everyone that's over there until they come back.
Today we mark the 5th anniversary of the Iraq War on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests, Steve Horvath and Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, two individuals who have served in that war and bring their own unique perspectives to it. And we'd like you to bring your unique perspective to the conversation, too. Our phone number is 261-6371, 261-6371. 1-800-780-9742, 780-9742. Steve and Brian, I'd like to get into your specific experiences in Iraq. Steve, why don't you start by telling us about your service overseas? Where were you, and how did it change you?
Well, Brian might appreciate what I'm about to say, Glenn, and I don't mean to to come off as sounding funny, but I really can't say where I was at. And the reason is because of, I was attached to a unit, a special forces unit, and the unit or the folks that I was that I went with this unit with, we were all required to sign statements of confidentiality. So the work was very interesting, I'll say, and it was productive. It was certainly eye opening.
How long ago was this?
This was in 2006.
And you're still bound by that statement of confidentiality?
Or for 28 plus years yet, believe it or not.
Is there a good reason for that?
It's an Army thing, Glenn. You have to appreciate that.
No, yeah, there are certain things that are going on that are extremely top secret, right? And you just can't talk about.
Steve, that's just what I tell people when they ask me. So, why does the Army do that? So I just tell them it's an Army thing. So I just leave it at that.
That's the easiest answer. You're right, Brian. But what I would say though is the second part of your question, Glenn. How did it change me? Well, leaving my family was really the most difficult thing, We talked just a minute ago about Operation Military Kids, and I remember being in the reserves, and I've been in the reserves for 12 years, so 10 years at the time when we were deployed, and I still remember goofing around with my friends and just making kind of a joke that this was in the late 90s, oh, we're never going to go anywhere. We can do 20 years, and we'll never go anywhere, and boy, didn't that change, Brian. And so when the day did finally come, we knew we were going to be activated, and so it was just a matter of time, and we were glad to be able to take our turn. But leaving home and leaving the family was really very difficult.
When you were overseas, how long were you away from your family?
I was activated for 10 months, and we spent 7 months in Iraq. In a Navy battalion, Navy and Marine Corps typically do seven-month tours. And we arrived in April of 2006, and then left in October.
And how old are your kids?
Right now, our oldest son Joseph is a freshman. He was in seventh grade, going into eighth grade at the time. So 14, going on 15. Today,
a young man really needs his dad at that point in time.
Well,
it's got to be so tough on you and your family.
Well, he certainly and my son's the kind of boy who needs a little bit of guidance, and I'm happy to give it to him, but I wasn't able to do it. And I tell you what, there was really I've never been so frustrated in my life by talking on the phone and trying to work problems out halfway across the world, you know, in the 5 or 10 minutes of talk time that we had.
Brian, is that a typical experience? Is that something that you can relate to based not only on your own personal experience, but also the experiences of all the men and women that you talked to when you were stationed in Mosul?
Mm-hmm. I think probably being away from the family was the biggest thing. When I was over there, Ryan was going through basic combat training at Fort Knox, basic and AIT, advanced individual training, learning his military job, which was cavalry scout. Down there at Fort Knox. During that time, I was there in 2004. I missed his high school graduation, and things like that. His last few basketball games as a senior on the Merrill basketball team. Things like that. When you're home day to day, sometimes you might take a little bit for granted. Come back and hit you pretty hard. Especially in my case, I didn't get to see him graduate. That makes it a little bit tougher. But probably being away is the biggest thing.
Is that something that's really kind of exacerbated by this war because of the kind of armed forces we have serving overseas? In previous conflicts like Vietnam, we had a draft. We had a lot of 17 and 18-year-old kids who weren't married yet, and they didn't have families.
Sure. I don't want to say it's exacerbated. I mean, I in no way want to diminish the effect that say, you know, World War II veterans who were gone for 3 years, you know, I have no way of knowing what that's like to be away from family and friends for 3 years. I mean, you know, as far as the type of missing of family, yeah, a 17 or 18 year old kid away from home, sure, it's going to be a little bit different than, say, you know, a 25 or 30 year old dad or, you know, or older. The type of family situation missing, it might be a little bit different, but overall, you know, I'm sure it's scary as hell for an 18 or 19 year old private, whether it's 2008 or 1965, to, you know, get his orders, his or her orders to,
yeah,
go across the puddle and be in combat. I mean, and be away from home for at least a year.
Steve, why don't we give out your phone number again, since we're talking about this subject, and we'll do it one more time before we wrap things up. But you do have an organization, Operation Military Kids, mm-hmm. that's supposed to address exactly this problem. Mm-hmm. Families that have mom or dad stationed overseas and the kids without that important leadership.
Yeah, and my number is at Wood County University Extension. You can reach me there if you'd like to find out some more information on Operation Military Kids. And my number is 715-421-8439. And if I could, Glenn, I just wanted to comment real quickly on your question. In my opinion, I think with the emphasis on the reserve component of the military and the National Guard, sort of a social experiment that's occurring right now. I really believe that because reservists and National Guard troops are being asked to deploy more than once in many, many cases. And that's something that is really unprecedented. In Vietnam, there were lots and lots of units that were activated and went and did a tour. Likewise, in World War II, there was all sorts of units that were mobilized and served. This is the first conflict where the nearly half of, I believe about 40% of troops overseas right now are reservists or National Guards folks, and many of them on their second tour. And that's where the social experiment, in my opinion,
people
is
who
occurring.
join the Guard, first of all, many of them never thought they'd be deployed to Iraq in the first place, but then to be sent over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's sure. got to be unprecedented.
Well, and I think what I mean when I say there's this social experiment going on, because most of these folks are family folks. They've got families at home. They've got civilian jobs. There's an extra burden that they carry when they serve, and they're proud to serve. Don't get me wrong, but the effects that are occurring back home are we don't really know what all those long-term effects are going to be.
Well, and the stress on their employers as well.
Sure.
To fill the gaps that are absent.
What should employers do for the men and women who are called to serve overseas?
Steve, do you want to take a shot? I mean, in my personal for one thing, there are certain laws that, you know, mm-hmm. that pertain to that. When a soldier, a guardsman, reservist gets activated for duty, I mean, there's their employer by law is supposed to depending on the circumstances, make sure that job is there for them when they get back.
You know, but it's one thing to have that job for them when they get back, but while they're gone, they're missing the opportunity to advance. They're mm-hmm. missing the opportunity
sure.
to learn new things and
sure.
to further their careers, and that's got to put additional strain on the family.
Mm-hmm. It can. And mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that is perhaps adds to the stress when a service member does return to their place of business is unless – they happen to have a colleague who also had served. There's really no concept of what that person went through the preceding however many months it was, and to tell that story is sometimes it's lost on your colleagues.
Right. They have no, and I've gone through that myself with working at least at one place where there were very few people that had ever been in the military, had any experience at all being deployed. They just you know, they just can't relate, whether it's a supervisor or people working with you.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this deployment and redeployment, is it causing some young families to break up and hurting their potential to raise children and pursue careers?
It happens.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Brian, I'm sure you read the Army Times, and, that's I stopped by our Veteran Service Officer office. It's in the Wood County Courthouse, so I stop by there every so often, and at least once a week, and read the Army Times. He doesn't get the Navy Times, unfortunately, Brian, but the Army Times, and there's all sorts of statistics, and they're upfront about it, the impact it's having, not only on reserve and National Guard folks, but active duty as well.
I'm going to ask a philosophical question then. How can we ask so few to sacrifice so much while the American people as a whole are not being asked to sacrifice at all?
Brian, you want to start with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, and it's not something that I, at the moment anyway, being in the military and all that, I don't want to say I don't think about it. I guess it kind of ties in with being over there, being in a combat zone. Coming back home, knowing that stuff is still going on, and then seeing people get all wrapped up in stuff like American Idol and things like that,
mm-hmm.
And not really doing much as a whole, as you say, to sacrifice. You know, I'm sure you have your groups, you have your family support groups, and other church groups and that sort of thing, doing things for troops. But the American public as a whole, when you sit back and look at it, I would say that there's not a whole heck of a lot of sacrifice going on.
I agree with you, Brian, and I've made the comment to several folks that, in my opinion, unless you have an immediate family member, mm-hmm. Have been there yourself or a neighbor or someone that you know that's involved, it's not on your radar screen. And I think that's got negative impacts for our society as well.
Sure. But at the same time, by the same token, one of the reasons, I'm in the service is to make sure those people have the freedom, if they want to watch American Idol or whatever. I mean, that's, it's kind of a weird situation.
I'll tell you what would focus attention. A military draft would certainly focus the attention of the American people.
That would get people's attention in a heartbeat, bringing the draft back.
Well, I think it's interesting you brought that comment up a minute ago already, Glenn, that that's a political hot potato that no politician wants to touch, but yet it's sort of they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth at the same time. They want to support the effort, but when it comes to taking a drastic step like that, nobody's going to risk taking that step.
And meanwhile, we have these volunteers being sent back over and over and over again without mm-hmm. sufficient time between deployments to get their lives together.
And I agree with Brian, just made the comment that as a service member, one of your jobs is protecting the rights of folks who want to watch American Idol. And I agree with that. I would take it one step further, though, in past conflicts, the burden has been shared across society much more equally, and that has bringing an appreciation to it closer to home. Not occurring now.
We often talk about military people fighting overseas in order to protect our vital freedoms, our freedom of speech, freedom of the press. American Idol being part of that. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking to two Iraq War veterans on this, the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War. If you'd still like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 261-6371, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life, why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Just joined us. Boy, you're missing a fascinating conversation. On this, the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War, we're talking to two people who have served overseas, Steve Horvath and Brian Jopek, with their own stories to tell. And again, if you'd like to join us, we've got about 7 minutes left of the program, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Brian, you served overseas in Mosul, working at a pirate radio station and gathering the stories of the men and women who were serving in northern Iraq. If you can just pick one or two of them to share with us, what would you choose?
Well, as far as the stories, one of the stories I did was a female first lieutenant with a with the Striker Brigade up there in Mosul, with a military intelligence unit, and her last name was Curdy. Her father, I believe, was Lebanese, and her mother was Kurdish. And as a little girl, they lived in Beirut. And I got caught up in the middle of all the fighting there. And we had U.S. personnel as peacekeepers. And she and her family were rescued by American Marines. And they were pulled out of their house and basically rescued. And she basically said that was the reason that she joined the U.S. Army, because of that positive experience that she had from U.S. Military forces as a little girl. I mean, it made that big of an impact on her that when the time came, she was able to join the military, and at the time in 2004 was a first lieutenant in the U.S. Army. And one of the things that she did, she told me, was when the soldiers went out on patrol and dealt with the kids, the Iraqi kids, when she would interview them when they came back from patrol, she would ask them, what did you tell those kids? I mean, what was your message to them? How did you interact with them? Her message was, we have to keep working with the young there in Southwest Asia, in Iraq, to help turn things around.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Mark in Presque Isle with us. Mark, you are on Route 51. Thanks so much for calling.
Well, thank you for the program, and I especially thank you, Brian and Steve, for your service to your country. It's obvious in the words you've shared today that you're standing behind the freedom that we take for granted too much here in the U.S., and I'm reminded of a little story here of a young gal that just got back from Iraq, happened to be at her St. Patty's party and was cuddling with her on the couch here. And it's amazing some of the stories we can hear personally from the vets that we're not getting at all in the media. Things that are going well, challenges, yes. But all we need to do is stick with the process of helping the Iraqis get back on their feet. And just like we were still over in Korea, for crying out loud, I think we can stand to be a few more years in Iraq, and it's going to make a big difference. And I just can't thank you guys enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark, thanks so much for the phone call.
Well, if you'll indulge me, I did think of one story that I can share, since Brian shared that very interesting story just a moment ago. If folks can remember back about June, I think it was, in 2006, the American forces took out Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who at the time was one of the most highly sought after individuals in Iraq. And when they got him, they happened to have him on ICE in our compound. And the next day, several Iraqi interpreters I was chatting with them, and they were laughing. And I asked them, what are you laughing at? And they happened to see him. I didn't get a chance to see his corpse. But Iraqi interpreters were laughing about the fact that it was a great big fat man who had no hair at all on his chest. And to them, that was just a really funny thing because, that's, I guess, in, as in most cultures, a sign of masculinity. Here he was this, terrible man, but had no hair at all on his chest. And they got the biggest kick out of that.
I'm going to ask kind of a provocative question here, and we've only got another minute or so, but our soldiers, it seems to me, did everything we asked them to do. We deposed Saddam Hussein. We made sure there were no weapons of mass destruction. We helped the Iraqis draw up a constitution. They've had democratic elections, and now we have a government in place. We've done everything we intended to do. Why don't we just declare victory and leave?
Brian, you want to go?
I don't know that it's that clear cut yet. I mean, what you say, Glenn, for the most part, all that stuff is in place. Just a matter of making sure everything's working right, and making sure that the threat is much more greatly diminished. The threat to that new government is much more greatly diminished before we just leave. Otherwise, I think we're going to be back.
Brian, I want to thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and experiences today, and you too, Steve. And Brian, good luck on your deployment to Guantanamo, and can we catch up with you when you come back from that?
Sure.
Thank you so much, both of you. Thank you for your service.
Thanks, Glenn.
And find out more about the organization Military Kids. You can contact Steve Horvath. I've written the number down. It's at Wood County Extension, UW Extension, 421-8439. That's 421-8439, Operation Military Kids. Thanks to today's on-air producer, Jane Ritger, our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. And the song Heroes was performed by Branded Duo. Next week, Route 51 welcomes Daniel Mielke, a Republican who is running against Dave Obie in the 7th Congressional District. You can hear us every Thursday at 5 on the Ideas Network. Thanks again for riding with us today. Have a safe and happy Easter. Until next week, we're heading out of town.